Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to bring you some little excerpt from Ricky Skerritt. Talks about his West Indies first policy. Hear it? Some of it?
Financial
critical because it's affecting and to hire the best resources and to put the best programs in place. And it's not easy when all of your vendors are over 3, some of them for as long as 2 years, and they are reluctant to do business with you. And only doing it up with goodwill based on your newness and your promises and your own relationships. We've had, you know, on 2 or 3 occasions, we've had to be, all this only a few days, we've had to be delinquent with meeting the payroll, and that's the worst thing that can happen to a business of that kind, to struggle to meet payroll and have to be borrowing money to meet payroll. That sounds more a government. And the question is, needs to move from the sort of government-style bureaucracy and situation to a more private sector-oriented efficiency.
Good night, Mr. Scarrett. Having been a member of the board for some period of time, how do you explain being naive to the financial straits of Cricket West Indies?
Because the board never got cash flow reports. We got P&L and we got budgets. And we, in my humble opinion, about the extent to which we were going to be struggling time. In fact, I would say the financial report we just got, the cash flow crisis has been so on a fairly recurring basis. The board, let's be clear on this, that meets 4 times a year and may or may not get full documentation on everything. And in a lot of instances, the financial, you know, literally at the point of meetings, you can very easily miss a number of key issues, especially when you're a non-executive director and the staff is not necessarily speaking to you directly about some of the things that they're experiencing. We're fixing that, you know. We're opening up transparency. We're making sure that the communication is clearer and we have the observations and the findings that were brought to us in this report. And the desired objectives and remedies are now being implemented.
Well, it is a surprising revelation to us, considering that the construct of Cricket West Indies has not changed significantly, but I get more over the fact that...
Since when?
Well, I mean, since you were unaware of the cash flow difficulties prior to your taking office 9 months ago, but also looking at a cadre of directors and other people that go to quarterly meetings. I mean, there must have been someone with financial knowledge and skills that would have been incisive in questions and in meetings that this sort of thing shouldn't have been in the dark. That is a surprise to me.
Well, you haven't really come across any surprises yet.
Oh dear.
No, you're scaring me.
Oh dear. any more for this, Mr. President, at this stage?
Not at this point.
Not at this point. So we expecting some bombshells later on. Is that what you're suggesting to us?
No, I'm
shocking all.
Shocking all.
No, you see, you're going down a particular as a journalist. I understand that. I'm just simply saying the extent to which we are shouldered with significant remedies to now implement. There's no easy fixes to embedded operational issues. issues related to chronic cash flow problems. We've taken it on the other side, but, you know, it's just, remember, just for the record, the organization spent $22 million more than it earned in fiscal year 2018-2019. Mm. So $22 million
mm.
was supposed to be funded by a loan from the Jamaica private sector that was being put together by the former president, which never materialized for a whole long list of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a deficit of that size, you know that you're going to have it in advance, then you're either going to find a way to fund it or you're going to have to cut costs. There were no attempts to cut costs because there was so much confidence that it would be funded by a loan. Generated in the form of a bond, but we could spend 2 hours on your program talking about this, but this is not the right time.
No, not the right time.
But essentially, the let's say on day T minus one of assuming the presidency, you were totally unaware of the financial situation of Cricket West Indies.
I would say totally unaware. You can't be totally unaware that the organization is not a flush, profitable organization.
Right.
We have seen the organization struggle over the years to even break even. So what I said was that it was shocking for me the extent to which we had no cash.
Oh, I see.
It's about cash flow. You see, you can see figures, but unless you get clear information about cash, look, the organization itself wasn't even clear who it owed money and how much it owed money to.
Really? It wasn't that bad? Oof. Oh, my golly. All right. Well, in the interest of time, we're going to move on. Just before you came on the show, Mr. President, August Higgins, the noted Jamaican journalist, he's got an article saying, has Kerr abandoned the West Indies First policy? And in that article, he pointed out that Trevor Penny, you know, Monty Desai, and Chris Brabazon, the Corbin education manager, Desai, the batting coach, and Trevor Penny, the assistant coach, they've all been picked, and you enunciated a policy of a Senate First policy when you first took over. And there's some criticism coming from the Gleaners article written by Orbit Higgins. How do you respond to that, Mr. President?
There was a Sunday Gleaner article that followed the next day.
Right.
That as a result of the interview that they did with me. By the way, the gentleman who wrote that article without attempting to speak to anybody in West Indies, not even Jimmy Adams, who is a famous Jamaican and West Indian who is director of cricket and who ultimately gives, you know, the final word on some of these things in terms of the technical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no attempt. And then the Jamaica Sunday Gleaner called and asked for, some feedback. So I thought it was brilliant of the Gleaner to create an issue and then address it in the paper. That's great journalism.
Yeah,
you know, they created an issue which didn't exist and then softened it up after. Because the fact is that we have put out, first of all, for 6 months, we circulated a draft West Indies First policy to all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finally adopted a month ago at our board meeting. And it's been put out there for the media. It's on our website. It's all over the place. We've shared it with quite a few journalists. It's there. The problem is that not many people have read it, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about what we have done in that policy. One of the key things we have done in that policy is to insist first of all, that it is not a West Indies only policy. It is a West Indies first policy.
Oh, okay.
And that where the technical people are hiring the best from around the world who are not necessarily West Indians, that there must be an arrangement within their contractual arrangements. There must be an allowance for them to be reassigned as necessary to development and high performance situations, and they must be involved in active programs for succession planning and for passing on skills and technology and wisdom and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not in place before. That is a big one. As a matter of fact, they're speaking about who we hired, but we've also, as you know, come to I have to say, we didn't fire any foreign coaches, contrary to what you may have heard in other sources, pieces of the media. We actually reassigned the foreign coaches we had, and they refused to carry out the high performance and developmental role that we were asking them to perform. And so we came to a mutual termination agreement in the case of the former head coach and the former batting coach.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue then comes up, Jimmy and the new, of course, as you know, we have a West Indies head coach now.
Right.
So, and that was a matter of policy that we would not even invite any non-West Indian heritage coaches to apply for that position. So there is actions speaking louder than words. And that head coach and his boss, the director of cricket, then set about to put their management team together. In the meantime, there was a new head coach for the women's team, Gus Bobby, and he set about with his boss, Jimmy Adams, to put a management team together. And if you look at the management teams, you will see that the foreign coaches are people that have been asked for by that West Indian cricket expertise, not by the board.
Mm-hmm.
The board did not say, we want those foreign coaches, arbitrarily picking them for whatever reason. The coaches that are now picked by the head coach,
and the latest edition of that program out of Voice of Barbados.
Look, we're not going to watch it anymore. But then hang on. All of a sudden, as we got down to the end, two young men from the West Indies almost brought the bacon home to the West Indies side. And the difference in the end, just one run. Just one run, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. 29 required for the last over. The West Indies got 28. And it now sets up the third T20 to be played at Kensington Oval tomorrow, starting at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. We look forward to a fascinating contest. West Indies won. England won. Of course, there's a game on tomorrow. Then we go to the weekend. And something tells me we can have, as we say, a humdinger. We shall see. I'm Andrew Mason, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest. And already we've got some very special guests on Zoom. I see good old Michael Gatton. Good to see Mikey. Steve Harmison is with us as well. And, of course, fellow Alfonso Wallace. We're also going to be talking a little bit later on the Under-19 tournament, which is very much at an interesting stage. And Chris Stetley and Prout Bass will also be with us as well. But without any further ado, let me say hello to Mike Gatton, the former England cricketer. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Nice to be with you. I hope it's a nice sunny day wherever you are.
I like that. And Steve Harmison, who's enjoying Barbados. Hello, Stephen. How are you? Steve? Where's he gone? Maybe he's gone down to the Gap to get a drink before he comes back, but he was just on Zoom. Just
hello,
now.
I'm here. You got me?
Yeah, we got you loud and clear. Are you enjoying Barbados,
yeah.
Stevenson?
I am. I'm enjoying it even more. I've just beat Mark Butcher 5-4 round Royal Westmoreland.
Oh, you did, huh?
So, yeah. the bragging rights are with the bowlers and not with the batsmen at this minute in time in the commentary box of the England section of the commentary team. But yeah, I'm loving loving Barbados.
Yes, Steve Harbison, of course, the former England fast bowler. I would have enjoyed Sabina Park. We'll never forget that test match, and you were so absolutely brilliant. Stephen, let's start with you, though. It is quite nicely set up now, of course, at 1-1. Let's do an assessment, first of all, of the pitch. How have you found the Kensington pitch so far?
Not good enough for me. I don't think, I'm talking as a former fast bowler here.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020 cricket, I want to see sixes and fours. I want to be, the atmosphere needs to be, the atmosphere in the crowd hasn't lived up to what the normal Caribbean atmosphere is, and largely down to the pitch. I don't think it's come alive until probably the last five overs of that second T20 international. The surface hasn't been, I don't think, good enough conducive to players being able to trust the bounce and hit through the line of the ball. And I think it needs to be better for T20 cricket. I think test matches, you need to have a contest between bat and ball. But I think in 2020 and 50-over cricket, I think we need to be entertained. And unfortunately, I don't think the pitch has lived up to some of the cricket that's been played on it so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you're right, because when we look at the stats in relation to the first game, England struggled to make 100, didn't they, on a pitch that was given the assistance of the bowlers.
Yeah, 100%, 100%, and that's something that I think England needed to just to have a look at a little bit quicker. They didn't assess the situation or the conditions, or adapt to the conditions quick enough. And by the time they did, it was game over. England were four down just outside the power play, and that was it. And it was a rampant West Indian side who were backed up in the field, and Kieran Pollard he couldn't believe his luck the way they were going, but. I also look at this West Indian side and say, where's it been for the last 5 months? Because this is the side that should have played in the UAE, mm-hmm. in the World T20, and that it would have given them a better chance going into Australia in 9 months' time if this dynamic, free-spirited, free-flowing West Indies team had a tournament under their belt. But obviously not meant to be. England weren't complacent. I just think they didn't quite read the situation, conditions, and West Indies got really on top of England. Second game, it was back to the usual England, and it'll be interesting to see how the West Indies come back from that.
Mm, indeed. Well, we've got, of course, Dr. Andrew Ford with us as well, and Philo Wallace. But let's go to Mike Gatton. Mike, you're all the way back in England. You've been watching on. Your impressions of the first game and then the second? It was a low-scoring encounter for England. Certainly in the first game, they did better. In the second game, when they made 171 for 8 and actually won that game by one run. Your impressions, Michael? Just turn your mic on. Just turn it on. Okay.
That's fine. I keep forgetting these Zoom things. I've done enough of them now. I should actually recognize it. Anyway, no, I think, like Steve, that the wicket was obviously a little difficult to start with, maybe a little bit damp, knowing they had a couple of games back to back. And I think possibly it was a bit slow, and they didn't pick up the pace of it. But certainly the West Indies batted really sensibly, which is nice to see, because it's often some of the times that you watch the West Indies team, they get a bit impetuous. But I think Mr. King managed to cement the first innings in the first match and really get them into a good place. And England just didn't get enough runs. I think in the second innings, Reece Topley, I thought, bowled magnificently well.
Mm-hmm.
And he really gave England the start they needed. So they were never really in the hunt. And sort of six or seven down, it was just, I actually went to bed. I'd be a perfect place for me. I watched it up until then. I thought, well, the West Indies have got no chance, a bit like the crowd, as you said in your interview.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Shepherd and Mr. Hussain got them very, very close. But even with getting three sixes off the last three balls, I think the captain was probably saying to him, just don't bowl a no ball or a wide. And mm-hmm. if you go for three sixes, it doesn't matter because we're still going to win. But it was a fantastic little session of play when I watched the highlights. So, look, as Steve has said, it's good to see some of these young guys getting a chance at long last. And the guys of old and great have stepped down. And And I think there's some really good young talent in that side from what I've seen so far.
Mm. Dr. Ford.
Right. Good night to all of you and to the listeners. I'd say so far the series has been quite entertaining. I think that we've seen England learn to bat better, but we've also seen both pace and spin do well. We've seen good fielding, we've seen bad fielding, but you know, we've seen a game of cricket, and I think of T20 cricket in a different way. I don't think necessarily that white ball cricket is all about just batsmen dominating and bowlers running for cover. I think it, mm-hmm. it should always be a game of skill, and I believe that both sides have shown skill at different times. In the first match, the West Indies batted very sensibly to overhaul the just over 100, but it took them 17 overs, which showed the effort. And in the second match, you saw the first half of the West Indian team didn't bat very well. But the question I'd like to ask is to Mike, do you enjoy this type of cricket compared to what you were accustomed to? Because in your day, there was no T20 cricket,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and now you get to see a different type of cricket that even the 50-over cricket in your time was rather pedestrian compared to now. So what do you think about?
Yeah, without a doubt, it was certainly pedestrian compared to these days. And as I say, I think the great thing about cricket is it's very flexible, it's adaptable. And I think I'd like to think the players will be as well. And I do get a little bit frustrated when some of the guys say they find it difficult to go from Test cricket to 50 over to sort of T20. I think all the very best players in the world manage to do it quite easily. And I just wonder why the others can't. But no, look, I'd love to have played T20, try to bowl a few here and a few there. And look, it's been a great game to promote the game and make it a bit more fun in a shorter space of time. And I think, you know, as I say, cricket does tend to be able to morph into something when it needs to. You know, in our day, we had to play 40 overs, and that was seen after something like 65 overs and 50 overs, and the 40-over game was a real special game. And now we've got T20. I think it's fantastic. I just hope that people realise that it is a game that is fun to play, which is what it's there for. I'm sure I'd have enjoyed playing it. But look, Test cricket for me is still about... That's a game to play. But I would be very disappointed being a professional cricketer if I couldn't play T20 well enough. So I enjoy it, but it's one of those where I can watch a certain amount, but not all of it all the time. There's a lot of it around the world, and some of it goes on too long. And I still, you can't be the test match, and there's been some great test match cricket going on just recently. And I like the 50-over game still. I know and it's changed immeasurably. But it's still some fantastic cricket. So for me, it all works well, and the guys are enjoying it. The people enjoy it. But I just would urge the younger players not to just to try and say, well, you know, I've whacked a few sixes and a few fours, so I'm going to go play IPL now. Cricket's about trying to test yourself about the best in the world, and playing test cricket is the way to go. So I would urge the younger guys, to try and play some test cricket and try and understand themselves and why it's called Test cricket.
Great. Steve Harmison, I know you're a fast bowling and cricketing expert. We've seen Topley, Mahmood, Jordan, and also Mills. Tell us about how you found the English quicks to be going in this format thus far, two games on.
Mm. No, I think he's dropped out, actually.
Yeah, he dropped out.
But there's a gentleman that dropped in, Gladstone Small.
Oh.
Did you know that gentleman? He dropped in. Hello, Gladstone. How are you? Are you enjoying your second home?
Gladstone, you can take your mic off and tell us how do you think the English quick bowlers have done on the Kensington wicket so far. Top right hand corner.
Stoney.
Yeah. Top right hand corner from you.
Gladstone. Gladdy, we want to hear you. Corner. Yes, Gladstone.
no matter how much of this stuff you do, it.
Yes. He's gonna sort it out. He's gonna sort it out very soon. Let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo.
No.
Philo. Your impressions of what has happened so far. Philo.
Hi. Good night, Andrew. Good night, Dr. Ford. My Gavin, so nice to see you. The last time I saw you at the Oval. Glad to see you also there. And the people in Barbados, obviously the new government has been elected, Andrew.
Yes.
I don't want to dampen your program, Andrew. I lost my mother.
You did?
She died in New Jersey, but I committed to
your show. My sympathies.
She will want me to do this story. Right? And also the people at Dr. Santos who have all those samples to do.
Mm.
To try to keep Barbados in the green light. I want to tell the people of Barbados to continue to be very, very careful with Omicron. It is not a joke. Things might seem rosy, but everything is rosy is not sweet. Andre caught the two T20s so far with the cricket matches. I know Steve said the pitch is a little sporty, and you have to understand too that not a lot of cricket has been played against an oval for a while. And all the preparation and all the practice games, when it comes to the actual match games, you know, the match pick is something different. I thought the English batsmen in the first game underestimated the West Indies a bit too hard. I found themselves four down before they can even blink. And West Indies obviously continued that momentum in that first T20. Jason Bowler magnificently well to go. So 4 for 7. I hold them down to a total, which they batted sensible and got it. I thought that Brandon Thing showed good sense of batsmanship. It's a pity the second game he didn't, but then they had a different proposition and restocked the left arm seamer. But I thought the first game England came too hard at West Indies and underestimated them and they got caught napping. In the second game, they looked to knuckle down. You saw Jason Roy fighting out the conditions and getting the opportunity to score, and they got a very good total. But then again, with some good common sense batting, West Indies nearly got over the line, but it was just another loss. But the way in which they played that second T20 gives us a lot of courage and a lot of heart. And, you know, from the coach, he said that this is a better prepared side than what I made the World Cup. And I hope that is true. But obviously, the third game is going to start Wednesday, and England are going to come even harder. They're the number one team in the world, T20 team in the world, and they're in Barbados to prove a point. Now, West Indies obviously have to continue a good, sensible cricket and realize, look, that, you know, not all big shots will work. I thought in the first T20, the way how they rotated the strike, and it was very admirable. I thought they would have done that in the second T20, and unfortunately, that did not happen, and the muscle came in the bottom. From the least expected, Akeem Hussain. You know where Mario shot the ball, but I thought that they put up a good fight. But at the end of the day, the series is drawn 1-1 so far. I have 3 more to play, Andrew, and let's hope that West Indies can turn the tables. I'm hoping that West Indies can really turn the tables and win the series and keep cricket and keep the public happy. The crowds are happy, and let's keep the public of the Caribbean happy with some more victories.
You're interesting. All right. We're going to take a break. Of course, Gladson Small. We should be able to hear from him. Yes, he's waving to me, and we're also going to cut away pretty soon because remember the Under 19 World Cup is very much in the Caribbean, and we've got Chris Tetley, and of course we've got Paul Batch, who are very important people. It is a very interesting stage, and of course our listeners will also want to hear about our youngsters. But let's pause for business calls. Mason and Guest, brought to an association
Mason
with our very good friends ASAP White Rum, the best shot of the day.
Don't doubt me, because I was your honesty. Nobody can doubt me, because I was your honesty. Right after the tea interval, this thing sat off in Queen's Park Oval. From the time the ran single run out, I don't know where all this bottle and stone come out. But it was bottle and stone riot in Queen's Park Oval. And the whole test must turn like a carnival. I do hide me clean head inside a canal to get away from the big scandal right in the middle of the federal
camp. Good evening to all. Good evening to my old skipper. That back up there, good old Blighty. I'm sure he'll be looking forward to getting down here in March. Gat and
Phil,
Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, Phil, buddy. With your recent loss. But listen, it's always any excuse I can do to get down here. I'm always here. But I'm here obviously with my tour group, taking in these five matches. I must admit that T20 isn't my bag. I only go to T20 cricket if I'm working, I must admit. But it's been good. It's been good fun, good entertainment. Particularly the first game was a bit of a misnomer. I think England underestimated the conditions of a poor pitch, and didn't when you set out in these games, you always have an idea what total you feel you ought to get, and that total in T20 cricket, we all know the fast score is around about 8 and over 160, but a team needs to gauge. You should gauge what the fast score, because fast score varies depending on the pitch you're playing on, and on that pitch, on the first game, it wasn't the pitch for 160. So they obviously for that the West Indies won that game quite rightly, and guys got the comeuppance that they deserve. Second game, obviously they regroup, and they realise, and they actually, it's amazing that someone like Jason Roy. I think in the 10th over, he was only on 16 runs.
Yes.
I mean, that's unheard of for Jason Roy. That's not his role. His role is to go in and blaze, trailblaze, and go hard or get out. He again, what he did, he was smart enough to say, right, okay, this pitch is a little bit tricky. Second pitch was a little bit tricky. Had a little bit more, had a bit of tennis stance. So he kept himself in. And then he attacked the bowlers that he felt he could attack. So that was clever by the England team, and I thought they did well because they batted well to get 170 runs. Because I thought that pitch wasn't the best. So it wasn't the best either. So I mean it's amazing that funny enough that on a square that when was cricket last year at Kensington Oval? You'll be able to tell me, Andrew.
Long, but in fact, well.
Quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the ground looks wonderful, but for a pitch, for a square that hasn't had any cricket mm-hmm. for a long time, I mean, obviously I can't get close to the pitch, but it doesn't look in great shape.
Ooh.
So if I was the official, say, I would be concerned about that. It looks devoid of grass, of green grass, proper live grass. So I don't know if you had a water shortage down here or something.
Yeah, but it has come under the microscope. In fact, we had Steve Harmison talking about it. Mike Gallen spoke about it as well. We're going to try to reach out to Richard Prophet. It was a little bit later on to see if he of course, is the creator. We'll try and speak to him. But that certainly is a concern. And Phil O'Wallace, you would have played several innings on the pitch at Kensington Oval. What has gone wrong with the Kensington pitch, Phil O?
Joy, I'm going to say again, not enough cricket is played at Kensington Oval. And the guys who are preparing the surfaces don't know what type of surfaces they're going to put out.
Ooh.
And that is the problem. They're guessing what type of surfaces they're going to be put out because we heard Richard Prophet on this from said the pitches are going to be good. Now, I to be honest, Andrew, this call for a bit more, I don't know, a bit more rolling to get them a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because people would like to ball a more truer bounce. And the batsmen hitting through the line. But that has not happened. The pitches that they've played on, the two pitches have called for application. And then in the second T20, there was a short side, and everybody's looking to hit the ball to the short side and going across the line of the ball. So if the pitch was truer, maybe those shots would have been more productive. But to me, I think the services, you just need to apply yourself. I like the whole Brandon King approach at first T20, and I think that's the kind of approach that is needed on the surfaces. So the pitchers had just now, because they're playing on Wednesday, so they have had 2 days to prepare for the third T20, and hopefully that pitch should be a lot drier and more conducive to the stroke play. I know everybody wants to see the ball going out of the ground, but these pitches that they played on the first two, it's called for a little bit more application.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Jason Roy applied himself in the second T20. Unfortunately, he didn't go on to get a half century. But he showed what is required. And England still got a decent total of 170 yards to defend.
Mm-hmm.
So it just called for application. but not enough cricketers gameplay that tends to know. But we know the pandemic and stuff like that. The guys that don't get trainers, but I don't think they're getting opportunities. The 15 guys who are in the franchises, in the franchise, to actually play on those services. So that is the problem. So the ground staff don't really know what type of pitch they're going to produce because not enough cricket is being played.
Mm. Well, I know Gladstone, you've got to leave us pretty soon. You said you only have a couple of minutes with us, so we're going to focus on you. I don't know, are you going to the Gap this evening, Gladstone, with your with all those you brought in here?
I think it's not Friday tonight. It's, well, I'll leave that one for Friday night on the fish fry on Friday. Look, I haven't had any flying fish yet. I don't know if they've gone too proud to see the flying fish, so I'm looking for that. Now, I'm just having dinner with my group at the hotel with my guys there, so I'm sure I'll get smacked into some nice mahi-mahi or something really good. I've actually managed to get some breadfruit. They got
breadfruit. There. Wonderful. And if you get it from St. George, it's even sweeter, isn't it?
you know that's right, Andy.
Yes.
I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, what was great about T20 cricket for me is about entertainment. I'm actually don't really care much about the result. Obviously, if it was a tournament, yes, you obviously want to win the tournament, but it's entertainment for me, and that's what was provided, obviously, in the second game, albeit in a losing. And a losing cause where this, I believe, I looked as though this England team, we know that they're devoid of one or two of their regular T20 players, the likes of Butler and Bairstow and Milan and these sort of guys. So it's quite experimental, this England team, and I think we'll see, we will see some more changes as they go through tomorrow and at the weekend. So you're going to see some inconsistent performances from this team, because they're all vying for places as they build up again later on this year. There's another T20 World Cup in Australia in later in October, November. So these guys now, that it's theirs to try and make a mark to put their name forward. But so for instance, like our bowling on towards the end of that game.
Yes.
Just smacked up. Okay, we got the game won. Let's see if we bowl, if we just bowl at a length where a lower order batsman. Let's see if they can hit us. We continue to hit us, which they did. So at least they now know. They didn't know before. They now know when people are trying to hit you, you have to either bowl it away from the reach of the bat, which we all know you can't go too wide. Oh, you bought it right underneath them at their toes. I mean, it's actually quite simple, quite frankly. You just got to bowl the ball right underneath them where they can't get their levers into their shot. But and that's what we continue to give those lower order batsmen, and they hit the ball. I mean, it was amazing. The young kid, at one moment I think Shepherd actually hit a ball to long on. He didn't take the single because it looks as though he was the one who was going to smoke it out.
Right.
And this young fella, he swung it beautifully and he actually hit it clean. Shepherd was off the swing across the line a bit, whereas Spain actually was hitting it gun barrel straight.
He was, yes.
It was great. All of the England bowlers fed it. It was almost as though, okay, we know we're going to win this game. But it got a bit smelly at the end. I mean, that last ball, it only needed to be a no ball that went for a couple of runs.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, a game that you should have won easily.
Mm. You were scrambling.
Yep. That would have been, but hey, it's for entertainment. And that's what but you need to have decent pitches to give these players a chance to show how good they are. And that's what's required. That's what's and that's what I hope to see.
Hmm. Well, Gladstone, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and certainly speaking to us. Always a pleasure. Enjoy Barbados. Enjoy your breadfruit. You just need some flying fish and cuckoo. Get some shark. We're going to give it to you from Skeets Bay, where I was born right there. Some nigger heads as well. And an old wife. You know, you don't know about those fish at all. And the grunts and all those things. Right, indeed. Okay, thanks very much, Glassman. Enjoy the rest of the evening. All right, there you go. Right, okay. Well, of course, you got Mike Gatton with us as well. Mike, we're going to come back to you shortly. But what we're going to do, we're going to do a commercial break now. And, of course, there's the Under 19 tournament, which is here. And Farish Bash and, of course, Chris Stetley are with us. And we want to break away to talk to them a little bit in relation to what we're expecting. But it will come after our commercial break. Mason and Guest brought to an association with the very good friends at ASAP Work Rum, the best shot of the day.
Yes. Mason and Guest brought to you, coming live from Barbados. Right, so we love to invite you to be with us a little later this week, or Sunday, to be exact.
Good evening, and welcome to The Cricket Show, broadcasting around the world every Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. blogtalkradio.com/thecricketshow, or fast bowl us an email with your questions and comments to thecricketshow@comcast.net. And now,
because there's been some talk about the pitch, and we hope to reach him as well. A little bit later on the show, we've also got two tickets to give away. Yes, the Barbados Cricket Association offering two tickets, and of course, thanks to Stephen Leslie. But let's just talk a little bit about the whole question of the Under-19 Youth World Cup, which is very much in the Caribbean. Chris Stetley and Farood Bass, they've joined us. So let's say hello to you, Chris. How are you, Chris?
Good evening. I'm very well. Thank you.
Right. Okay. And of course, Farood, how are you?
I'm doing well, Andrew. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, good. Wonderful. All right. Now, let's start with you, Chris. You're the ICC head of events. How has it gone so far, in your view? Any challenges?
There's always going to be challenges when you're running a world event across four countries. And bringing in 16 teams with the number of matches we've got and the broadcast. So, yes, a difficult event, but we're very happy with the way it's going so far. We successfully got through the first round stage, and the second round actually started today in Trinidad with the plate competition. And the Super League, which is for the top eight teams, will start tomorrow here in Antigua.
Indeed. And from your perspective, Farood, how has it gone so far? You are the tournament director. Are you happy with what has happened so far?
Yeah, I'm very pleased and happy how this tournament is going so far. As Chris rightly said, it's a very complicated tournament generally. And in these circumstances, with COVID around, you know, it gives us another set of headaches. But, you know, we were quick to react, and thankfully, you know, the Cricket West Indies have hosted tournaments under these conditions for the last couple of years. So we adapted well. We overcome many of the obstacles, and we've managed to have all the matches played according to the schedule. And, you know, that might seem simple, but trust me, in this time it's not an easy task. But we got there.
Mm-hmm. And I've been hearing that you've been having challenges with COVID. Is that true, you know, Chris, in relation to some players coming down with COVID? Is that true?
Yes, it is. Yes, we've had some cases of COVID, which, to be honest, isn't unexpected given the nature of the virus. But we planned for such scenarios, which is why the event has been able to continue successfully as it has so far. Mm-hmm. So nothing has really surprised us. But with the planning that we've got and the measures that we're taking to keep not just the participants safe, but also the inhabitants of all of the host countries, we've been able to manage things so far and as I say, the tournament is ongoing. It's successfully completed the group stage, and we're looking forward to a really competitive second round.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I know Phil O'Wallace and Dr. Ford have questions for you, but let's quickly go to Mike Gatton. Mike, the Under-19, very much here in the Caribbean, Youth World Cup, England, very much involved in it, doing pretty well. We got a youngster from Barbados. We gave him, of course, to you, young Bethel, who it has elected to play for England at that stage, and I suppose if he continues, may very well play for the England side. How important is Under-19 cricket and this tournament, Mike?
Look, I think it's very, very important. If you look at the guys that have come through the system, it's the first time that they get to really represent their country and actually see the quality of the players from overseas. I remember sort of when we had our first under 19 tour of the West Indies, around about 1976, and we came over and we got the first sighting of Malcolm Marshall as a young man, and you do see those quality of players. You know, you won't get a much better test cricketer anywhere at any time in the world than Macko. And he was there as a young kid, wasn't quite as strong as he turned out, but he was still very, very quick. And I just think it's important for these guys to understand that there are, you know, when you're in your own little country and you're playing your under 17s and under 15s, you play amongst yourselves. And it's really good to get out and play in different conditions around the world and play and watch, you know, different players. And you see that there are other players around the world who are sometimes much better and much more mature than you are. So it's a great learning process, I think. And you know, you see different cultures and you see different attitudes towards the game. And when you think, you know, you're pretty good, you soon come down to earth with a bump when you see the quality of players from all around the world. And that's the great leveler of cricket is. So for me, it's a first taste for anybody who's sort of been sort of in their own little cocoon in their own country to get out and about and see other players play. And I think it's a fantastic experience for the youngsters.
Dr. Ford, any questions?
A question for Chris. Playing such a big tournament under COVID protocols and not having a crowd, the atmosphere and the encouragement for the guys, what's been the feedback from the young players kind of playing, you know, to the empty stadium thus far?
Well, firstly, you're allowed to have crowds. People can come to watch, and it is free if you're in Antigua or Trinidad. Trinidad government have just said that we can have some crowds back to the matches there. So people can come and watch it live. But the players are loving it. Why wouldn't you love playing in an under-19 World Cup? But for all of the reasons Mike spoke about in terms of the opportunity it gives them, the experience that they get from playing against different teams, styles of cricket that they might not have come across before, in different conditions. Who wouldn't like playing cricket in the West Indies for all of the touring teams? So you know, despite the fact that the stadia aren't jammed full with fans, they're loving the experience and they're gaining an awful lot from it. We've got countries the like of Uganda participating, and you know, for them, traveling halfway across the world to play in a World Cup is a huge opportunity, a huge experience, a lifelong memory. So, despite the fact that we are operating in slightly more controlled environments than we would like to be in, or we would ideally be in, I don't think it's dampening in any way the enthusiasm for the event or the enjoyment that the participants are going to get from it.
Hey, Mr. Bash, what about the COVID protocols and, you know, trying to work that into to having the tournament? What have been any challenges there?
We've had a fair share of challenges with this tournament. You know, we spent months planning to get teams into the country, and just as the teams were about to fly, the Omicron variant came about. And we saw borders close, especially UK and the US, and we had to look at non-traditional ways to get people into the West Indies. So that means applying some new visas for countries that we never used to travel. Then we wanted to get more players in just in case that we need a replacement player. We didn't want to go through that headache of flying them along the world just to get to the West Indies. So that means we had to get more hotel rooms. And just had to, you know, just plan a little bit more just to make sure that people can get to the West Indies safely and they can stay safe here. So it's been a fair bit of challenge that we've experienced getting people here. But thankfully, the protocols that we have in place managed to keep everyone safe so far. We've had the tournament, like I said earlier, all the tournaments were executed and were played. And people, despite being in this bubble, they're enjoying the tournament, so we're very happy for that.
We had Floyd Reefer on earlier, and he told us we see cricketing intelligence and skill, and he was upbeat about the young West Indians, but things haven't really gone as as we'd hoped. What are your feelings about how things have gone for us?
But Dr. Ford has been a challenge, a massive challenge for the West Indies under 19s, under the lead of Florida Rico. I think 2 weeks ago, I had the Vice President, Dr. Shallow, on this program, and I told him our players, the under 19 players, seem to me, they're still acclimatizing. When you're still acclimatizing, and the tour is about to start, you're going to be in trouble. See, I take warm-up matches very seriously. And we need to understand that, and as Mike Gatton said, these guys are coming, these guys are going to play against the best under 19 cricketers from other countries, and they're going to come hard at them, and they're going to really make them understand which level they are at in relation to youth cricket. And obviously, Cricket West Indies have had to have a lot of work to do in relation to getting our cricketers more focused on that bigger picture of winning the World Cup. I would like to know if we ever went back to 2016 when we won under Hetmyer Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
If they look at the successes of what happened then to try to help us in 2022, but we seem not to. So we find ourselves now out of the competition and only playing for something called a plate. It's just unfortunate, but they will have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And as we keep saying, the West, please learn from our mistakes and get stronger and better as we go forward. And we're hoping that that can happen. But we've had a lot of accolades, a lot of accolades towards the squad, which we should.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, on the day of play, they did not really come to terms with the skill levels of the other nations.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up just losing out. It's just unfortunate, but they have to learn from it.
I would like to ask
either Chris or Bash a question. How are the players finding the services, the different services,
right.
at the different playing venues?
Mm. Chris?
You'd need to ask them as to really how they're experiencing them. And obviously, it is a great experience for the touring players to come and play on different services.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen, I think I'd like to commend the curators across the region for the quality of the services that they've produced for us. They're obviously critically important for a World Cup that we have top quality pitches and outfields for matches to take place on, because that's only fair then to enable the players to show off their talents and perform to the best of their ability. But equally, I'd say the training facilities that have been produced have been very, very good as well. And during a tournament, you probably spend more time training than you do at the match venue. And that training, that preparation before a game is critically important. So the focus for the region in preparing surfaces hasn't just been the match venues. It's been across the nations where we're staging matches to make sure that the training centres are good. And that's enabled all the teams to prepare well as well. And I think the quality of the cricket that we've seen is in part because of those surfaces. So I'm sure they're enjoying them because players have performed and we've seen some high skill levels.
Farouk? Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris is right. We can't say if the players are enjoying the surface. I can't imagine it won't be anyway.
Mm.
But one of the things that we have to factor in is that we started preparing all the pitching outfields for all the venues that we're using for this tournament. Practice and match venues. And we had our regional curator, Ken Crafton, and ICC's curator, Andy Atkinson, who were here about 6 months ago, looked at all the pitches and the outfields that we were going to use for the tournament. They came up with a plan to ensure that we had the best surfaces available for this tournament. And all the curators across all of the grounds did an excellent job getting the venues ready. So I'm confident that they did due diligence to get the pitching outfield ready for this tournament. And I'm sure the young men would love to come, well, they love coming to a different environment and able to play on different surfaces. So I can't imagine that they won't be happy.
Mm, I see. All right, let's go back to Mike Gatton as we head towards 7 o'clock Eastern Caribbean time. Mike, having watched the West Indies over the years, I mean, you would have had some tremendous battles. And, you know, we see some of our under-19 cricketers, they look good, but then all of a sudden, you know, they don't look good anymore. West Indies cricket has been on the decline for a long time now. Are you surprised by where West Indies cricket is now when you consider what would have happened when you played, you know, against some of the very competitive cricketers of the past?
Well, look, I would say that certainly in the era I played in, that there were just huge amounts of West Indian cricketers all vying for places. And I think a lot of them obviously missed out. And very disappointing for them, but there were just a huge quality numbers of players that the West Indies had, certainly in the 80s and 90s. And I can only assume that it means that you miss out generations at times, because it was very difficult to dislodge for probably about 7 or 8 years a lot of the sort of like core 16 players, and therefore the guys that may be coming down, you might have lost a generation. I think also a lot of the time people don't realise how much hard work cricket is, and these guys, you know, getting to the top, staying at the top is hard work, and, you know, they have to be professional. And I think, you know, the likes of Macko and Mikey and just all the guys, Courtney, Kirtley, Andy, I mean, Viv, and you know, and your new chairman of selectors, Mr. Haynes. I mean, he, you know, he came and was still learning at the ripe old age of sort of 30 or so, 40. You know, he came and played at Middlesex. And, you know, you never stop learning. And I just think that people don't realise actually how hard they have to work. And are they prepared to do it or not? I don't know. If you learn the basics of the game well, then you can get into it. But it's about playing and learning and doing the right things and talking to these guys. This is what I don't quite understand sometimes, is that, you know, you've had so many really good cricketers over in the West Indies who have a lot to give back. And I just wonder how much time the young guys sit around talking cricket to these guys who represented the West Indies so proudly and so well. So, you know, when I sit down and chat with Desi, hopefully when I do that in March, and maybe even Philo, we, you know, you just talk about cricket, and I just don't think the youngsters talk about it enough. And whether they, you know, think it's going to be easy, or, you know, we'll just play T20 and therefore we only have to do back it as hard as we can, but there's a lot more to the game than that. There's a lot more nuances that people have to learn, and sometimes the quicker you learn, the better you get, but you need to understand what you need to do.
Well, it's 7 o'clock in the country. When we come back, of course, from a commercial break, which will come up very soon, we're going to open the lines. I know many people certainly want to speak to you, Mike, and we also got a couple of tickets to give away. But let's go back to Chris and to Farouk before they actually go. Let's start with you, Chris. Where is this event being shown? I mean, around the world? I mean, what's the reach like?
Yeah, all over the world. All of ICC events are globally broadcast. Here in the Caribbean, you can see it on ESPN.
Right.
For 20 matches of full broadcast coverage. But then all of the other games, we are live streaming. So via the internet platform, ICC.tv, you can watch all of the action that is not actually formally broadcast. So icctv.com, is our URL. And a little subscribe there, put your details in, and then you can watch all of the other games. So all of the matches globally available, which is an expansion in the coverage for us from what we've done at previous under-19 events. But the interest is there. So we're really excited to be able to profile all of the next generation of superstars, which is what we're seeing. We don't know who they're going to be, but as I think Mike said earlier, you look through the list of world-class players now that first came to prominence at the Under-19 World Cup, and it's a really, really long list. Many of the international captains at the moment came through the Under-19 World Cup and first came to prominence. So, you know, we're excited to see who the next ones will be.
Well, this is a question for both of you gentlemen. You know, we've had 4 global events now in the Caribbean. You know, how has the region evolved, really, in terms of hosting these elite ICC tournaments? Let's start with you, Farouk.
When we first started hosting ICC events in 2007, now it was an opportunity for us to show the world that the West Indies is capable of hosting world-class events. You know, so far, the West Indies hosted 4 of those ICC events. And after the success we had in 2018, where we had sold out crowds for the semifinals and finals, and unprecedented attendance throughout the entire match, we've proven that the West Indies is on par with any other cricket nation in the world. So I think we've established ourselves as, and I would say, the place to have cricket. And you know, when we host cricket in the West Indies, we bring a certain flair that makes us attractive and everybody wants to come. So I think we've gone a long way from having very minimal work at venues in 2007 to having 11 international broadcast venues. Mm-hmm. And after this tournament, we have 21 venues now that meet ICC minimum standards.
21.
So that's a big accomplishment. Mm. So 21 that meet ICC minimum standards too. So, I mean, that's a big accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And that's what ICC tournament brings to the region. It allows us to evolve not only our image across the world, but the venues that we have.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Chris?
Yeah, look, I'd echo what Fawaz has said. I was lucky enough to be to live in Jamaica for 2.5 years in the lead up to Cricket World Cup 2007. So, and I've worked all of the ICC events that have been here since then. And Cricket World Cup 2007 was a catalyst for some major venue redevelopment throughout the region. So a lot of work was done ahead of that event. And since then, we've been delighted to come back and bring world cricket events to this part of the world. It's a fantastic place for people to come to and play. It's a fantastic place for people to enjoy and experience cricket. As Fawaz said, it's a unique place in which to play cricket. And we've been fortunate to work with Cricket West Indies as it is now, West Indies Cricket Board of the past, with familiar faces who have experience. Fawaz was involved in 2007 and has been involved in each of those ICC events that we've mentioned. So, you know, stadia have developed and evolved, and experience has been gained and critically retained. There's a lot of people working at Cricket West Indies now that first came into cricket around Cricket World Cup 2007. So they've gained that experience, and then what's been good for Cricket West Indies is that they've kept those people involved in the game, and that makes running what are very complex events a little bit easier, because from our perspective, we're talking to people that know exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They know how the region works. They know how the cricket is run here. And so a difficult exercise becomes a little bit easier because of that experience. Mm-hmm. So, very happy to have been involved in the events to date here, and we're looking forward to another one coming in 2024, the Men's T20 World Cup.
Right.
To be hosted by Cricket West Indies along with the USA for the first time for a major ICC event. So we're actually going to take the opportunity of being in the region to chat to Johnny at Cricket West Indies about starting the organization of that event.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for coming through, Chris Tetley, of course, the ICC head of events, and Farwood Bash, of course, who's the tournament director. It certainly was a pleasure having you on the show, and let's talk again sometime soon.
Pleasure. Thanks very much. Good night to you all.
Thank you very much indeed. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to open the lines. We're going to really get into the meat of that last game, look at some scores. I note with interest that Smith is in the West Indies side, didn't bowl a ball, although you had six people bowling. What is that all about? And could we have had any difference in terms of strategy as we approach getting that 171 made by England? The other question is, should there be any changes made to the West Indies team? These are all things we'll talk about when we come back. Nathan and guest, Roach and Association, with our very good friends at ASFP White Rum, the best shot of the day.
Good evening and welcome to The Cricket Show, broadcasting around the world every Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. blogtalkradio.com/thecricketshow or fast bowl us an email with your questions and comments to thecricketshow@comcast.net. And now, let's talk cricket, lovely cricket.
417.90 already. We've got a full board and we're going to certainly be talking to you. Philip Wallace, you know, you expect a full board. And of course, we've got Mike Gatton, who's going to stay with us. I just saw he had some water. So Mike is ready for the task. Now, the Barbados Cricket Association, they want you to come to Kensington Oval. And we've got two questions. In fact, last week we had two winners, and they certainly enjoyed the time at Kensington Oval. Let me remind you, the third game is on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, and then we go into the weekend, the Saturday and the Sunday. So let me give you the very first question, and the lines, of course, are open. Here we go. How many runs did the West Indies require in the final over of the T20 International against England to secure victory. You remember that? You remember that? And how many did they actually make? That, of course, is the second T20 that was played. What I want to know from you, how many runs were required in the last over, and how many runs did the West Indies actually make? Can we go and take a call? We can.
Good evening.
Good evening
good
to
evening.
You. Yes.
Good evening, Mr. Bainford.
Good evening.
They were required 28 runs.
They required 28 runs.
In the last over.
And how many did they get?
They got 37.
Well, then if that was the case, then they would have won.
You said
they required 28 runs.
Yes, yes.
Okay. No, you didn't make it. You didn't make it. Let's take another call. Larry, can we take another call? I know that my very good friend Ken Husband, in all white tonight, being very neutral with his colors, is coming. He's got his mask on. Lovely mask.
Watch your conduct.
How are you, my friend? How are you, Ken? Nice to see you.
Hello, man. How are you? Hello, looking like a young boy.
He is a young boy. And, of course, the other gentleman there is Mike Gatton. Have you ever heard of Mike Gatton?
Yes, of course. That's when he was a youngster.
When he was a youngster.
Good evening to you, Mike. How do you do? I see you're keeping company with the intelligent attorneys at law.
All right, let's take another call. Can we? 441-790. A ticket is an offer. Hello, welcome. Hello, welcome.
All right, let's try this one.
Hello, can we try this one? Hello, welcome. Ticket is an offer. Yes. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I heard the question, but I want to ask a question. Is the commentary coming over the radio?
No, the commentary is not coming over the radio at all. That's unfortunate.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay. So 28. I would ask the try to ask the question. 28 was required. Yeah, and so. 26.
You got your radio on. That's not correct.
Yes.
Based on the information I have here, that's not correct.
Okay.
Can we take another call? We want to know how many runs are required in that last over, and how many West Indies made. Of course, you know that they lost by one run. Hello, welcome.
A very good evening.
Good evening.
I want to pass on a question, but I want to make a quick comment. I'll try
sure.
to speed it up. Okay. My call is to the passing of Fellow's mom.
Right.
I know it would be very, very tough and hard, but I wish him well, since you're calling us. Now, what's there ever become of former selector Courtney Brown and his wife, et cetera? What's your latest on them?
Well,
I haven't heard about them for some time.
I think they're doing pretty well. You know?
They're doing good, okay.
Yeah, I think they're doing pretty well. You know, he had a horrendous accident.
Right,
his
right.
wife is okay.
Okay.
You know, he's coming. He's coming around. I've tried to get him on the show on a couple of occasions. That hasn't worked out as yet. But let's hope some...
We wish him well.
Yeah, we wish him well.
Right. Now, I want to go on quickly with something else here. Now, selecting. This selector thing, I'm a bit concerned with selector. I feel that the selection is in your merit. You should keep yourself in the cricket and all the selecting and all that pretty thing. Once you merit your player, it got to be very glaring
right.
that you must be selected. So it's in your hand, really, to be selected. I want you all to really answer. I would hate to think a whole show will go on.
Mm.
And we hear this statement, the West Indian players fearful of piss.
Ooh.
Y'all heard it?
Yes.
Afraid of piss bowling.
Mm.
And we are the experts and has established piss at such a magnitude.
Yes.
And I hear saying about West Indian critters fear for piss.
Mm. What,
I mean that.
Well, what we can do, we can get a reaction from Mike Gatton on that. Have you heard that, Michael, that the modern day West Indian batsman doesn't like piss bowling? Have you heard that?
I can honestly say I haven't, no. I might learn a bit more in March when I start talking to a few people, but I certainly haven't heard that through the grapevine. But everybody who plays cricket at that pace and you get some good pace bowlers, it's never the most comfortable time.
No.
It's the sort of thing that you've got to learn to play and get out the way or do something, but as I say, it's never nice. I wouldn't say you would love to go out and face it. It's a challenge, but as I say, it's nothing you'd really like to do, but you've got to learn to play it.
Yeah.
But it pulls your metal, though.
It does. It pulls your metal. That's yeah. very true.
I regard you all.
Okay, thank you, Raw. Let's try and see if we can get a winner. It heads to 714. Lots of calls. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Take it as an offer.
Yes, Mr. Mason.
Yes.
Yeah, you wanted 30 runs, and you lost on the get 29.
They wanted 30 runs?
And get 29.
Oh, my golly. Well, how did you come up with that, sir?
Run all right.
That's not the answer that I have here, provided by the Barbados Cricket Association.
29.
They wanted to score with 172. There was 142. Over the
door. Mm.
They get 29 runs.
Hold on. So you're saying how many runs did they require in the last over?
They wanted.
That's the question, 29. You know.
29.
How many runs? Not how many they got. How many did they require in the last over?
Are they require 30 runs to win?
Hmm.
They get 29.
And they got 29. Yeah. Well, that's not the answer that I have here. Let's take another call, can we? Ken?
Yes.
And Phil, you're disqualified.
Are you missing?
It is.
Are you missing?
Yes.
I want to go ahead and answer.
What's the answer?
Yeah.
Tell me, don't listen to your radio. 750 in the country. How many runs do they require? In the last over. How many runs did the West Indies require in the last over?
29.
20, exactly.
28.
Yeah, right. Of course, thanks to Stephen Leslie, who set the question up. Of course, Stephen, wonderful man, communications director, I hope I got your title right, communications manager at the Barbados Cricket Association. So they required 29 runs. And they got 20, so they lost by one run. So we got a winner. Paula, what's your name?
Anthony Callender.
What part of Barbados are you from? Are you from St. Philip?
From St. Thomas.
You're from St. Thomas. I thought you were from the Republic.
Yeah, from St. Thomas.
Okay, fine. Okay. Well, Ken Husband, who's from St. Thomas as well, Bob Anderson, Michael.
Are you always do everybody? How you get so long? You always do people business.
What you can do, you can leave your name and your number with Ken, and of course, we will be in contact with you to make sure you go to Ken's in De Novo.
Pardon me?
Well, we're going to be in contact with you tomorrow. The Barbados Cricket Association will make that call to you. So just stay on the line. Ken will talk to you off air. Thank you very much indeed for that.
Hello.
All right. So let's go back to our panel. Philo, what were you laughing about there? Philo?
Andrew, yes, please, Andrew. It's very amusing. We had such an exciting game, and so many people had the wrong answer.
You can imagine that.
The fireworks came at the very end of that game. You know, you had a question about Odin Smith, why he didn't bowl.
Right.
I think that Captain Pollard needs to make decisions for West Indies cricket. I'm dead serious there, Andrew. If you're going to pick a man who's supposed to be the fastest bowler,
right,
and you don't bowl him, don't play him. Play the extra batsman. But don't look to embarrass people that kind of way.
Mm.
Because this is a man who we saw against Ireland, and he looked good.
Right.
He was shaping himself into this kind of cricket. We saw him in the CPL, really bowling fast, getting good rewards and stuff like that. And he's in the IPL auction as well. So you pick him as that kind of bowler.
Mm-hmm.
And Pollard didn't bowl a ball in the series against Ireland, but now
no.
He's bowled four second T20 against England. But that's
Four overs, no winners, one for 32.
I don't like the message that he's sending. I don't like it.
Mm.
If you're not going to bowl a guy of that quality, don't play him. Tell the selectors, I'm not going to bowl him. I'm not going to play him. Give me the extra batsman.
I see.
And I think we have this is West Indies cricket that we're dealing with, Mr. Pollard. I make some decisions for West Indies cricket. I am dead serious. It doesn't look good. And Odin Smith can't feel good either. He can't feel a part
no,
of that squad.
No.
It's not nice.
No, I agree with
not
you.
Not nice at all.
Six men bowled. Cottrell, Holder, Hossein, Allen, Pollard, Shepherd, and no Odin Smith.
Andrew, you cannot correct wrong. Wrong is wrong. You have to do what is right.
Mm.
And I want Captain Pollard to do what is right for West Indies cricket.
Mm.
I want that lead selector, the Honorable Dr. Desmond Haynes panel, let him know the score. This is no five-bait cricket anymore. This is serious cricket for points.
Mm.
We had two people from the ICC just on this program, happy with what we're doing in the other 19s. We have a number of facilities that are coming through.
Right.
So the facilities, and you have cricketers, and you have the right coaching systems, then we can start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm.
So you're going to unfair, man, like Odin Smith, and I call it unfair. I watched the game, Andrew, and I felt shame.
Yes, yes.
The man in bowling, and then you're batting down behind. You're even bringing up the order to say, well,
yeah. I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand that.
Like them saying, it is not good for West Indies cricket. Let our cricket show the importance of unity and togetherness.
Right.
Don't make no decision based on no country. Make a decision based on West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what might happen. And all the other cricketers around the world have known West Indies cricket for. People mm-hmm. making decisions for West Indies cricket. And I have another thing, too.
Mm.
I'm happy for Mario Shepherd, but I'm starting to know that he's looking at the IPL contract and playing for West Indies. I want Mario Shepherd to focus on the next three T20 games for West Indies.
Right.
Let us take care of this T20 series against England.
Right.
If we do well enough to beat them, let us beat them. And then what happens after this series, Mr. Shepherd, I commend you on what happens. I don't want you looking at that picture of IPL yet. Let us zone in on these three 20 matches that are very important for us.
Mm.
We were defending champions a year ago, T20 competition, and now we got to go into qualifiers to qualify.
Yeah.
So let us focus on this.
I agree.
Get the IPL out to your vision for right now,
mm.
and let's deal with this.
And win, season, and win. Please. That's true. Let's go and take another call, can we, Ken? Hello, welcome, Mason and guest, 721 in the country. Hello, welcome.
Hey, good night.
Good night.
Mr. Mason.
I
was trying to get through, but I did not get through. Mm. My team was 142 at the end of the 19th over, which means in order to win, they wanted 30 runs, which would make them 172. They got 28 and lost by one run.
Right.
They said they wanted 29.
Right.
They did not get through, and that was the wrong answer.
Mm.
Because they were 142 at the end of the 19th over.
Right.
So they would have to get 30 runs because England scored 171. So
right.
One run more.
Right.
Scored 170 and scored 28 runs.
Mm.
So they end up at 170 and lost by one run. So therefore, the answer that was you gave the ticket to was incorrect.
So
I wanted to let you know that.
So you're saying because these obviously would have been provided for me. You're saying that they required 30 runs and not 29. Is that what you're saying?
It was 142 at the end of the 19th over.
Right.
Phil
Wallace has gone to his cell phone. I think he's going to calculate. Phil, is the gentleman right?
Well, you check that. I want to compliment you, Phil, and Dr. Lord on an excellent program.
Not Dr. Lord, Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford, sorry.
Adrian Lord is in the athletics.
Okay, I do believe that. Phil also play him a more vital role in the West Indies cricket, apart from just the subcommittee he serves on.
Right.
He has a brilliant knowledge on both West Indies cricket and he has West Indies cricket.
Phil for president. Phil for president. You never know, because I understand that...
will be doing fantastic.
Yeah, right? I understand. My very good friend is not coming back. You never know.
He operates in a leading capacity in many associations. I know it's not easy to do the job that everybody wants you to do. But I would think that Phil is... has best in the cricket at heart.
Right.
And I understand Pollard's tactics. The wicket was holding, and Pollard thought that his guile and tricks would do better than bowling the pace-up of the youngster.
Right.
I think that he deserved to bowl because he was picked to bowl.
Mm.
I'm impressed with best in the cricket, and I'm glad that these youngsters come through.
Right.
And I would like to see some more changes and forget about these stalwarts that we work with.
Mm, I see.
He's to do a fantastic job, and if I'm right, with that number, I think you owe me your ticket.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, Philo, is he right? Philo, you're muted. Quite strange, you're muted, Philo.
I'm trying to get it, Andrew. Dr. Ford
is the caller, right? I was given this.
What the caller said mathematically is right, but of course the question is that where the game was. But I think this is the second week in a row that the answer to the question.
Well, don't blame me. Don't blame me at all. But of course, Philo, can you check the scoreboard for me there? Pull up the scoreboard. Philo, and of course,
we'll have to be for over. That's the thing. You got to get
the question that was given to me.
If you can find it,
yes.
You Google the second test and go to commentary, and
right.
At the end of every over, it tells you what the score is.
Right, right. We're gonna get it. The West Indies side required, well, how many runs in the last over, and how many they made. So how many runs did they make, caller?
Yeah, they ended in the 19th over. It says there were 142 for
that's
eight.
That's right.
They
ended in order to win, you had to score one run more than us. One run more than England. It should mean that you had 30 and 142 would be 172.
Right.
But England scored 171.
Right.
Or 28 and you end up one run less than England.
Right.
So the answer...
Scored 28 and 20th over, correct.
That's right.
Yeah. So you... Yeah.
So
Andrew, you're going to have to check the answers to these questions.
Indeed. All right, well, call up. You've been so brilliant. What we're going to do, we're going to take your name, and I'll leave it with the Barbados Cricket Association to make that decision. All right.
Thank you.
All right, okay. Well, we got another question lined up. Just want to see my guys on Zoom, if that's possible. And, of course, we will give you the question pretty soon. I'm sure that this one is absolutely correct. So,
standby.
Okay. So just hold on. We're going to go, of course, to Ken. Ken, can you take the caller's information? And the BCA may have to give it a couple more tickets. I'm sure they don't mind. Mike, in terms of the England side, do you expect any changes for the third game? It's a vital game tomorrow. You expect any changes?
I think they will make some changes. Just looking at the squad, I mean, there's a guy called Phil Salt in there who's a decent opening batter. You'll have Ganton who's come in, who's a pretty decent sort of left-arm seamer. You know,
right.
Reece Topley's done well. We've got three or so. So, it really does. You know, Tyrell Mills hasn't had a bowl yet either. David Payne's the other left-armer. So, yeah, I mean, I think with all the guys and Harry Brooks, the other batter we've got. So I'd be surprised if they didn't because, you know, Owen Morgan did say at the start of the series that, you know, it's come here to give some people some experience and go from there.
Mm.
Obviously, he doesn't want to lose. I can tell you that for nothing. But, you know, there's some really good cricketers in there. Liam Livingston hasn't played yet, and I think you'll like to see him play some cricket. He's a really good cricketer. He bowls leg breaks and off breaks, right-handed, and he whacks the ball really long way.
Right.
And he's a very interesting cricketer. One of those that I hope that Mike just try and get himself into Test cricket because to have somebody who can bowl leg spin and off spin in your team really does make a huge difference if he can bowl it well. And he bats excitingly, but it's whether he can actually temper it to Test cricket or not, I don't know. But he's certainly a huge talent. So, yeah, look, I think it's about giving some people a go, but I don't think they want to lose a series, to be honest with you, Andrew.
Right.
I think they really want to win. So they'll have to temper that one way or another. But I expect they're going to make one or two changes.
Just before we go back to the telephones at 7:28, how do you rate Morgan as a captain? Do you like him as a captain tactically, Mike?
Look, he's a good manager of people. And, you know, a lot about captaincy is not necessarily... You know, making the right decision at the right time is about managing people and getting the best out of people.
Right.
I mean, he's one of the few that stuck with someone like Adil Rashid. A lot of captains would have probably pushed him to one side, but he tried to build Adil Rashid up, and it's because he supported Adil Rashid and got him through. I mean, that was very good man management, very, very good indeed. And, you know, you've got different people in your team, so it's about managing the players as much as anything else. as well as try and obviously get the right bowlers at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as much as anything, I think he's a good all-round sort of guy, tactically and obviously man-managing. For me, yes, I think he's done a really good job for the players.
What do you think about Kieran Pollard as the captain?
Kieran is a big unit in many ways. he's a huge imposing cricketer. I haven't seen him do it enough, to be perfectly honest. For me, I really like Jason Holder. I thought Jason was a very good captain when he was around, and sadly, he isn't doing it anymore. But look, you do have to have different people at different levels sometimes, and to make up your squad, and you have to find somebody in there to do the job. So I can only hope Kieran will give people a chance. But obviously, he seems to have hit on the fact that Mr. Odin Smith didn't get a bowl, and he's a rather lively cricketer. And actually, one thing that people do say in these games, spin and pace are the things that might get you wickets, and they're always very, very useful to get in one-day cricket. So, it might have been a very strange decision. But, again, captain's going to make a decision on the pitch.
Right.
And it might have been that the slower bowlers or the slower pitch might be harder to get away.
Right.
Or pace of the ball. You have to make that decision. So it's very hard to criticise anybody, certainly when I'm in the UK, let alone in Barbados, where I'd like to be. It is difficult. And as I say, to try and sort of say whether he's a good captain or not is a bit beyond my remit, because I haven't seen enough.
All right. Well, of course, we're going to talk to you about your test captain a little bit later on. Joe Root, can you hold on to the job after that Ashes trashing? We'll look at that in a minute. But let's go to the president of the Barbados Cricket Association, Mr. Conde Riley, to speak to us for a couple of minutes. Hello, Conde, how are you?
Conde?
Good. Where are you? Where are you? Are you at Kensington Oval?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I've been there for the last couple of days.
All right. Well, I wouldn't ask you where you are. I was just kidding as usual. Now, Conde, people have been struggling to get into Kensington Oval. Have you solved the problem and the process should be smooth tomorrow?
Well, actually, it was smooth on Sunday. It was a bit frustrating on Saturday, but, the COVID protocols had to be taken care of to make sure the safety of everybody. I think that was solved by Sunday. It should be okay tomorrow.
It should be. So what are your expectations in terms of the crowd tomorrow, Conde?
Kensington Oval was supposed to be sold out. We could have sold a full stadium.
Right.
But because COVID, we are at 50% in the stands, I think 70% in the boxes.
Right.
And,
I see. So you expect what, around 50% again tomorrow? Or just around 50%?
Yeah, we can easily, so we can sell 80%, 100%. But
right.
Because of COVID, we are, half capacity.
I see. Interesting. There's been some concern, Conde, about the pitch. Steve Armisen doesn't like it. Mike Gatton has had his concerns about it, and Phil O'Wallace. What are you saying to your ground staff?
Well, we played a couple of practice matches against England, and the scores were very high. Played one against England, the Barbados team, and one against the West Indies team. But as you know, the Kensington Oval has been on lockdown.
Right.
Actually, I thought it looked pretty good to me when I looked at it. But we always, I find that a team will bat badly and they will say the pitch.
Mm.
Another team will bat on the same pitch and they will say, we have a problem. It's all about adjustment. I understand that if any pitch, you want to see a flat pitch.
Right.
But it looked flat in two warm-up games, one against England and one against West Indies. And if you watch how West Indies batted in the first game and how they batted in the last five overs, I think the pitch was a major area of concern.
I see. Doc, any questions for President Conde Riley?
Conde, how have the members been coming out? The
right.
The members, they looked a bit quiet.
The members are on the same protocol. We had 50% in the members area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a COVID environment.
Right.
So really, the way it looks and so on is one thing, but then you have to take into consideration that you have 50% capacity. It will look a bit sparse and so on, but as I said, we could have sold out Kensington Oval a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
How about the length of time it takes to get into the ground? Are you satisfied with the procedures and you know how smooth it is to get into the ground?
Well, yeah, the first day was a concern, but I think that that has been sorted out for Sunday. It was sorted out for Sunday. And tomorrow should be a much smoother thing. But you know, when once you have to like give your ID number,
right,
you have to show your vaccination. Give your ID number. There's an app that they're using. They put it in the computer, and obviously that will take a minute or two longer than normally. Just show your ticket and go in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the major problem on Saturday. But I think everybody in stands know what to do. You don't have to walk with your your vaccination certificate. You go, you give your ID number. And the app will tell them once they put the ID number there, give you your name and your vaccination status.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's moving pretty smoothly now.
I know that initially there was a protocol that called for the wearing of masks during the game, unless you were eating or anything. How practical has that been for looking on during the game?
Well, on Saturday, I wasn't watching it on TV and so on, but I observed that a lot of people weren't, wearing their masks properly.
Mm-hmm.
And some people didn't have one mask at all. And that's something that we're trying to correct for the last three games in terms of having monitors to, just talk to people and tell them, listen, you're supposed to put the mask above your nose and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to police, 7,000 people, but it is something that is needed by the
mm-hmm.
COVID-19 unit.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to get that, in place. And we have our monitors to just guide the people. Just, give them a reminder, listen, you must be worn properly if you're not eating or drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, man, everybody watching cricket all over the world, football and everything about a mask. I say, but that is that country.
Right.
In our country, you have to wear your mask properly.
Mm-hmm.
But over a day, not really a day because it's 20 games, yeah, standards drop. And you have to have people there that, correct that.
Mm-hmm.
I would be first to admit that it wasn't being observed by a lot of patrons, as I observed.
Mm-hmm.
On TV, you'll see it probably a bit, more vividly. But from what I observed at the ground, some people were really, ridiculous.
I see. Just before you go, Conde, what about the numbers coming into the country? How many English, you have an idea as to how many have come in to watch the games from England?
It's my understanding that for this one day,
right,
that there are about 4,000 to 5,000 people on the island.
4,000 to 5,000.
Yeah, there's a lot more demand for the test matches. For the test match, sorry. And major consideration is COVID.
Right.
And we have 50%, so we have to find something for those people to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're here to watch cricket,
Mm-hmm.
But it's something we've been working on. We have had meetings with the local organizing committee the last 5-6 weeks.
Right.
And we're trying to get it right,
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different time.
Mm.
Normally, we would just flood the oval, but because of COVID, we have to put safety first.
I see. Conde, thanks for coming through and talking to us. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Enjoy the rest of your evening and stay safe.
Thank you.
All right. That's Conde, really president of the Barbados Cricket Association, 7:38. In the country, can we take a couple more calls? Of course, we've got another question, and we will certainly get to that shortly. Ken says we can take a call, can we?
Not at the moment. 4341790.
4341790. Thanks to you, Ken. Are you Ken or Ken Roy?
Are you all in?
Ken
Roy.
Well,
take a call.
I will. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Another 3 minutes left in the show. Hello, welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Listen, I want to say something, right?
Yes.
I see we had a man called Russell who opted not to play for the rest of the season and gone on his own, right?
Mm.
I would hope that Pollard do the same thing. I can't understand how Pollard could got his fastest bowler.
Right.
And you're looking to win a match.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't bowl that bowler. You ain't bowl. Pollard is a scraper in the wrong hole.
Ooh.
Pollard ain't doing nothing to the cricket.
Mm. Just be careful with your language. Watch your conduct. You know, Ken tells me that all the time. We don't want to get anyone into trouble. I'm sure you want this program to continue, right? So just seize and settle.
Okay, what I'm saying, right?
Mm.
I think Pollard could get Pollard can claim her and let Perron be the king of
Claim her. Oh my golly. Oh my golly. All right, thanks for your contributions. Can we sneak a couple of calls before we go back? We can. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, hello. Is that Carolyn again?
Yeah, I want to try again.
Yeah, okay. You want to try again? Okay, well yeah. Carolyn, what are we going to do? You know the first game that was played?
Yes, please.
Who was the man of the match in the first game that was played?
Yes,
who was the man of the match?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Carolyn. Come on.
All I remember is that you said this minute.
Yes, we won the game, but I want you to tell me who was the man of the match and give me his bowling figures. Can you do that?
Oh, God.
Can I give you a clue, Carolyn? Carolyn?
Yeah,
Carolyn is a business talk about Carolyn.
Yeah,
give me a clue. The man of the match is a Barbadian.
Is it?
It's not Phil Wallace. He's long retired. And Mike Gatton doesn't qualify.
Was it Jason Holder?
Jason Holder. Oh, yes. Jason Holder is the man. Yes, Carolyn.
Yes.
So we're going to be sending you to Kensington Oval, and you may even get a chance to visit the President's Box to meet Condé Riley. I can set that up for you. So, Carolyn, you're a winner. Yes, Jason was brilliant with the 4 wickets he took.
Oh, yes.
He was absolutely brilliant. What's your last name, Carolyn? Is it
Carolyn
Mason?
Edwards.
Oh, Carolyn Edwards. All right.
Yes,
what, all right. So... your good friend Ken Roy is taking your he's taking your name, of course you stay on the line. We'll take your number,
okay.
And we will certainly make sure that Carolyn goes to cricket. I'm sure that the BCA will be happy to have you on the show.
I'm happy to begin.
Wonderful, right? If I had the authority, I would give away another 10 tickets, but I don't. I don't want to be charged by the BCA for giving away tickets that I don't have. All right, 7:40 in the country. Can we take a couple more calls? I think we can do that. We're going to try to get to Richard Prof Edwards to ask him about the pitch because it has come under some criticism. Mike, if I can come back to you now. You were mauled in the Ashes. I know we're going to spend some time, of course, looking for the next 15 minutes or so in relation to the match upcoming. Why do you think that England played so poorly in the Ashes? And do you think that Joe Root can hang on to the captaincy?
Look, I think the preparation was just non-existent, really. They played 2 more matches, and you're playing against Australia, and it's not the best preparation. They've been in the bubble for the best part of 2 years as well, which I would have a clue how they must think or feel at the moment. It's not making excuses. It's just the fact that when you go to somewhere like Australia, you need to prepare properly. You need to have 2 or 3 decent warm-up matches to understand the sort of, the intensity that the Australians play their cricket, and just to get used to, you know, the sort of atmosphere that's around the Test series. So, you know, a few of them have been there before. They understand, but you know, the preparation is something you really need. And I know Australia hadn't played many test matches in the lead up to it. They played a bit of Sheffield Shield cricket, which, you know, 3 or 4 of them had some good run outs in some very tough cricket. So, look, I'm not trying to make excuses. Some of our guys didn't do the basics well enough. We didn't catch well enough. And if you drop catches over there, you've got no chance of winning a test match or any test match come to that. So, look, we didn't play very well, full stop. We didn't get any runs at the front end. Whether that's due to technique, to whatever. We were very worried about that when we first started anyway, most of us who are looking at the team. So you've just got to say, look, we got outplayed. We didn't prepare properly. And if you don't prepare properly, then you're never going to play well. And you know, it doesn't matter whether it's England, whether it be any test team. If you don't prepare well enough, you're preparing to fail. You know, for me, two warm-up matches against yourselves is no preparation for a series. Especially coming up against an attack that they had. And credit to the Australians, when they lost some players, they brought somebody in, they performed really well. So, no excuses. When I say no excuses, if you don't prepare well, you're never going to play well. Joe Root tried his best. Others were rusty, like Ben Stokes. You know, I thought it might give the team a bit of a boost. And then there were some strange decisions, to be fair. Why we didn't play somebody like Broad or Anderson. I know Anderson wasn't fit for the first test match, but Broadie probably should have played on a wicket that was doing a bit. And there were questionable decisions. And again, when you're not out there, you don't quite understand. But, you know, when you think of it, to the 3 or 4 days rain before a test match at Brisbane, cloudy day, you win the toss. You know, you you haven't played Broad, who's actually got a bit of a hex on Warner. And Warner goes and gets 90 odd in the first test match, something you didn't really want. So look, there were some strange things happening, but you know, when you look ahead, you say, oh, if we can get away with something at Brisbane, and then you know we get away with something, you know, and wait for the day night match, which is two test matches away. If you lose the first two test matches, your history anyway. Mm. Why not try and win the test match first up and try and be positive about what you're doing as a team. So, yeah, there were many, many things in there, I think, that didn't bode well, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the creator, Richard Prof Edwards, who's going to join us now. Richard, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Andrew. I'm good.
Good, okay. What are the expectations in terms of the pitch tomorrow?
Well, I mean, the pitches it's going to be a new one as well that we're using. It's been rolled out. It's pretty hard. There's some, I think, a bit more grass than you saw in the second pitch. But it's been rolled out. It's been baking in the sun. It should be a good pitch for cricket, I would think. It's not going to be, I wouldn't think it would give a hell of a lot of help to the bowlers, but so the ball should come onto the bat. It would be a good pitch, I would say.
Mm. Yeah, well, there's been some criticism of the pitch for the first T20, your reaction?
I didn't see anything happening really. I saw an over that Jason Hole the ball to Owen Morgan, which I don't think he touched any of these six balls he touched.
Mm.
The ball lifted and went through. I thought it was a extremely good over. It wasn't flying from a good length. It was the ball pitched back. Hole is 6'7" or 6'8".
Right.
With his height, he was getting the ball to bounce. At the other end, the left arm pacer, he got a few to come through, but by and large, I thought a lot of the dismissals at the beginning were soft by England, and they lost wickets before they realized what had happened. Five were out.
Mm, I see. So then the criticism, in your view, is unjustified.
Well, I didn't see anything particularly wrong with the pitch. The ball wasn't scuttling along the ground. There are patches that the grass was a lot heavier than in other areas and hadn't been fully rolled into the pitch.
Mm.
And therefore, you would get perhaps the ball skidding off a little bit more than it might have off the other bare patches.
Right.
But it wasn't a pitch that was a minefield or anywhere near that, you could say. And then in the second pitch, the ball came through at good height, right? So I heard one of the commentators talking about, he realized that I must be blind because I couldn't see the ball sticking in the pitch.
Mm.
The ball came off at even height, and I saw England bowl very well with the new ball. They ran in and bowled. West Indies seemed that they've forgotten that they got wickets in the first match with their fast bowlers trying to bowl.
Right.
Spinners came in the attack after three overs, and it looked like they were trying to do something that, looking for something to do when they just should have come in and really hit the deck hard and bowl properly. The bowling was very, very weak at the beginning, I thought, from West Indies.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mike, you're in England. Your reaction to what Richard Prof Edwards has just said?
I'm a long way away, so I'm a bit like Prof. He didn't obviously see very much, so I certainly saw a bit on TV and listened to things. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, England probably did not play as well as they might have done in the first few sort of matches.
I see. Mike, is that your dog trying to get in there in the back?
That's a great deal.
It might well be. He's wondering why I'm not in bed yet.
Oh, okay. Well, you've got another 10 minutes left.
It's getting close to 12 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. We're going to let you go very, very soon. I heard that.
But I will say that I expect Wayne Daniel might be my old teammate at Middlesex. Wayne Daniel might be up and about.
Yes. He's in the gap, Wayne, I'm sure.
He might well be, but I'm looking forward to seeing him and Roland Butcher as well when we get back out in March.
So. We got another 10 minutes left in the show, so stay with us, please stay.
Okay.
Just go back to Richard Prof. Edwards. Any questions, gentlemen, for Richard, our fellow on the board?
Richard, to be honest, I don't say anything wrong with the pitches. I thought England got it wrong in the first game, and they reassessed in the second and got it to a decent total. Third surface, Richard, is it going to be even Stevens with the boundaries? Because you saw in the second, you had a long side and a short side.
Right.
And most of them are obviously looking.
Well, there are six pitches in the block. So we played on number two in the first match and then number five on last match. So that was nearer to the western side. So the boundary would be a little shorter. I mean, this point would be labored about the short side. It's shorter than the other side. But it was by no means a very small boundary. So, I mean, it was belabored and smart about the short side, and so everybody looking to hit the ball to the short side, and we're getting into trouble. So the next pitch is number three. So that would be more towards the middle of the block. So it would be pretty even on both sides.
Thank you. And this third pitch will have a bit more grass.
Right.
It should truly bounce so they can finish. Because Akil Hussein hit through the line of the ball to hit three.
Yep.
So if you hit it through the line of the ball, that is telling me the surface is good.
Yep.
Yeah, I was saying that at the second pitch, the bounce was even. The ball came through good. And it was not the extravagant bounce that you saw that Jason was getting in the first match. Said that in the second match, neither he or the other bowlers tried to really whack the ball into the pitch hard. You didn't see one of the bowlers fast bowlers bowl at all. So, you know, it was kind of strange to me that it looked like we were saying, well, we got them out with the fast bowling now in the first match. Let's see if we can trick them and bowl slow bowling and get them out as well. It was a very strange thing. Their England bowlers, Topley, came in and bowled, I thought, really well.
Very well.
Coming through. Getting the ball to swing about, and he put pressure on the West Indies, and the crazy run out by Shea Hope to start it off. I mean, it was ridiculous to begin with that. And then West Indies lost by one run. But having said that, the match was done and dusted at 45 for six or whatever it was. It was lucky to scramble those runs in the end to make it look more decent. But it was really, I don't think that they were in the game at all.
I see. Well, Richard, we want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and speaking to us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm going on like you know, just
right. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Hello. All right. So thanks to you, Richard. All right. We got another couple of minutes left in the show. Of course, this is a show of variety. Let's go and speak now to Chetwynd Short. Of course, you know him, Dr. Andrew Ford. He's going to spend the last couple of minutes with us on the show. Chetwynd, the man, the party stand. How have things gone for you there at the party stand at Kensington Checkpoint? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you all. We're working still.
You're working hard.
We're working all into the night because what happened is that we normally take 2 months to build this out, but we only got 14 days notice. So although we have already started, we are continuing to work every day and night to make sure that we reach the standard of the Bombay Fort Beach party stand. So we're down here working all day now.
I know. We're not going to take up too much of your time. But how has it gone, though, in terms of participation for the first two games?
Well, for the party stand itself, it was kind of slow.
Right.
Like, I have good news. I can report for March now that is the opposite. We have ticket sales are going very well for March.
Oh, yes. And so you expect a capacity crowd for the party stand in March?
In March, And we really feel so caught. One of our days are sold out already.
Oh, wonderful.
It's the opposite from what is going on right now
for
the Parish Town. But we are glad about that because it gives us time.
Right, to really plan.
And it gives us time now to look at all the protocols and make sure we are executing them properly.
Because
if we were swarmed with a full crowd the first day, things would not have run as smooth. But no, we have the protocols in place.
Right.
Everyone knows that when they go to the bar, they must wear a mask. When they go to the bathroom, they must wear a mask. When they go for food, they must wear a mask.
Oh, I see.
We actually getting to put that in place now.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of numbers on the first day, what would you say? How many would you have?
The first day in March?
No. The first day, the first T20 on the weekend on Saturday. How many did you have?
We don't know. They're buying tickets all online, so we don't know that.
Right.
But we know the weekend will be better because
not
only because of them, but a lot of the locals obviously are up there for the weekend.
Right.
Because I won't pay $200 to come in the party start every day for, holding up this. I will wait to see how the margin is going. And if they don't have a winner after the third, I will come down for the weekend.
Yeah.
It's like a lot more people for the weekend.
Mm. Just before you go, remind us of the cost to get into the party stand and the packages.
To get into the party stand is $100 US.
$100 US.
But we have 75 US tickets for friends apart by four and for locals.
Okay.
Right? But the basic cost is $100 US. For that, you get five chits. One is a food chit, which entitles you to food. You have an option between chicken, fish, macaroni pie, rice. None of the usual things, sauce, salad, right? And then the five drink chits to get you any drink from the bar.
Ooh.
So say you went and you saw Johnny Walker Black. You just have to give a chit, you get Johnny Walker Black.
Mm.
If you like beer, you can use them on beer.
Mm.
If you like water, you can use them on water.
Mm.
What I do in my kit is, I use them on what I like.
Mm.
So therefore, it's not water.
We know that, Chetwin.
I will buy my water. I use my chit on what I like.
Right.
I have a Johnny Walker Black. Or I have a Remy Martin.
Mm.
Or I have some good Monkey Rum.
I see.
XO.
I see.
But we are looking forward, to take care of all who comes down.
Mm.
But really and truly, we know March is going to be a lot bigger
and better. Right.
But if you want to come out have a nice line, you can come out have a nice line with us this weekend or tomorrow.
Wonderful. Okay. We'll certainly want to continue to promote here on Mason and Guest to encourage people to come and be with you in the party stand. Chetwin Short, I want to thank you very much indeed, and no doubt you're looking forward to crop over in June.
Yes, you're looking forward to crop over. Definitely.
Have you spoken to Mia Maltese yet, the Prime Minister?
Listen,
yes.
Chetwin Short says so. There will be a crop over. It might not be the normal crop over,
right.
But there will be events, and we will put the protocols in place and we follow the guidance from health.
Right,
okay?
Right, indeed.
Okay.
We want to thank you.
All right, thank
continue,
you.
Continue the good work at the region's Mecca.
All right, thank you too.
Wonderful. Bye. Very program tonight. Of course, we talked to those guys at the ICC and the Under-19 tournament. We thought it was important to speak, of course, to the president, Mr. Conde Riley, and also as well, sometimes we don't talk to them a lot, but those people involved in things like the party stand. So it was good to here from Chetwin Short. Gentlemen, just a couple of minutes left in the show. Let's start with you, Philo. The West Indies up against England tomorrow. Would you make any changes to the West Indies team, Philo?
Well, Andrew, they're playing Shea Hope at the top of the order.
Yes.
I think you remember a couple of months ago, they said that experiment was going to stop. I saw Kyle Mears do it in the warm-up game, and he got a few runs.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, I Horanda's a little bit in the open.
No. What's going wrong with him?
The wicketkeeper.
Yes.
Sometimes it feels like he still has gloves on. He doesn't wrap his fingers around the ball long enough.
Mm.
If you look at it, see at the top of the order, is he the right fit for Brandon King? That is a tipsy-turvy kind of decision. Knowing that he might just go over the same 11 because the only other person I could see coming in there and just to add a little muscle would be Kyle Mears.
Kyle Mears, yeah.
We really need the X
exploit the full potential of Odean Smith.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
I agree with you,
Philo. Let him come in and ball hard, man. You know, and he's also good to and with his batting, because we could have even toyed with the idea, as I said to some of my friends, of maybe even promoting him. You had 170 to win. He's not bowling. Why not send him maybe at four and say to Mr. Smith, look, I would love for you to get 30 or so because I want to make it easier for the people coming behind you. That would have been a consideration as well. But they didn't do it.
Yeah, so the only other thing is the top hands. I don't know if they will change the 11, but
right.
You know, three at the top.
Right.
Keep it well. And I don't know. Peran is number three, so I don't think there'll be any changes to that 11 at two. And I just want to wish them the very best tomorrow. I hope that they can beat England. Beating the number one T20 team in the world must call for some kind of celebration.
I agree. Final words with you.
You have the tools to do it.
Right. Final words with you, Michael. Do you expect this to be a very competitive, but it's already very competitive, 1-1? Look into your crystal ball. Who do you think will win it?
Look, I think at the moment in time, I think England are in a good place.
Right.
And they've got, got some reserves to come in as well. And I think Tymal Mills will be an interesting addition to the squad. And I think... maybe somebody like a Liam Livingston and a George Ganton, Garton wants to come in, and David Payne too. So I think there's plenty of options for them to change. And I think, I'm looking forward to see Liam Livingston do a bit and Tymal as well, who can bowl really quick. So it'll be good. And of course your lovely Bayesian cricketer and Chris Jordan, who we've managed to nab as well, is always there, and they're about to produce some very good performances as well. So I think at this moment in time, having said that, you get some early wickets,
right?
See what happens. But if you don't get early wickets, then I think we've got some pretty decent depth in the batting down there.
Two things before you go. Firstly, tell us about the importance of Jofra Archer. I know he's had some injuries. How good is Jofra Archer, and what does he mean to England cricket?
Well, he's another lovely Bayesian cricketer who we managed to sneak from you.
Yes, I mean, we know that.
I just can't believe Wayne Daniel never played as many Test matches, but he was so good for Middlesex. I'm very happy to have had him as well. But it's amazing. I mean, Jofra has been a fabulous cricketer. Sadly, the injury has made it very difficult, and an elbows for bowlers are really difficult.
Right.
So I'm not quite sure how he's going to come through. But, you know, as I say, I think we have got some really good depth at the moment in the bowling in there, certainly in this particular competition. And Jofra is good in all competitions. Look, I mean, he's a huge miss for the guys in the Test series and the 50-over. He's a wonderfully good Test cricketer. A very, very fine one-day cricketer too. And, you know, it's something that England are going to miss. They've had him for a little while and seen how good he is. They're missing him, and he'll make the team stronger if he comes back.
Indeed. Well, I really want to thank you very much indeed. It was an absolute pleasure having you. Are you coming to Barbados in March, is it? You're bringing a tour group over?
I should be over for all three Test matches. So I'll
go
to that lovely little island, Grenada, as well. So we're landing in Antigua, but as I say, I'm looking forward to reacquainting myself with Philo and Roland Butcher and Wayne Daniel and Mr. Haynes.
Yes.
Right, Honourable Mr. Haynes, my goodness. Do we have to bow these days?
Oh, the Honourable, the Honourable, yes.
The Honourable, Desmond Haynes. Well, look, it's as I say... Barbados is a lovely island and lovely people, and as I say, I'm looking forward to getting back to see some old friends.
Well, go and get some rest now, because it's way past your bedtime.
You.
Thank you. And the dog would stop barking, though, I'm sure, that great Dane you got in the back there. Thanks to Michael Gatton. Always a pleasure to see you, and you've made a wonderful contribution on the show. We want to thank you as well, Philo Wallace, for coming through and talking to us as well. Thanks to Dr. Ford, always good. And by the way, Dr. Ford, some good friends at CWA said they'd love to engage you in terms of discussion. Richard Prof. Edwards made a strong defense in terms of the pitch at Kensington Oval. Steve Harmison was very unhappy with the pitch at Kensington Oval. And, of course, we heard from Conde Riley. And, indeed, we also heard from Checkman Short. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a bye tomorrow. It's good night.
Australia, Bangladesh, Bermuda and Canada, England, the Netherlands, India and Ireland, New Zealand, Kenya, Pakistan and Scotland, South Africa, Zimbabwe and Sri Lanka, administrators, players and fans, welcome to World Cup Cricket in the Caribbean. Welcome to the best place in the world. Welcome to the best game in the world. Every man and woman, every boy and girl, welcome to the best place in the world. Welcome, welcome, welcome one and all. Welcome, let's have a ball. We want you to have real fun in the islands under the sun. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the best place in the world. Welcome to the best game in the world. Every man and woman, every boy and girl, welcome to the best place in the world.
Welcome.
Good evening, and welcome to The Cricket Show, broadcasting around the world every Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. blogtalkradio.com/thecricketshow, or fast bowl us an email with your questions and comments to thecricketshow@comcast.net. And now, let's talk cricket, lovely cricket.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk cricket, lovely cricket. That's what we'll do each Sunday from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Call 1-515-605-9850. Again, that number is 1-515-605-9850. Good night, all. Hope you enjoyed the mission and guests out of Barbados.